Penny Marshall, who starred in The Odd Couple and Laverne and Shirley before becoming one of the top-grossing female directors in Hollywood, died on Monday due to complications from diabetes. She was 75. This morning, we present an archival roundtable interview with Penny Marshall from 2012. In her new memoir, My Mother Was Nuts, actress, comedian, and filmmaker Penny Marshall writes of her remarkable life, growing up the youngest of three in the Bronx. She had a daughter, followed brother Gary into showbiz, got famous as one half of Laverne and Shirley, got married twice, got divorced twice, and became the first female director to break the $100 million mark with 1988's Big, also notching films like Awakenings, A League of Their Own, Renaissance Man, and The Preacher's Wife along the way. The new memoir is hilarious, but also reveals darker times, drug use, an abortion, and an onset miscarriage. The book clearly shows that her trailblazing career was a happy accident. Again, the name of the book is My Mother Was Nuts. It's published by New Harvest. Penny Marshall, welcome to the roundtable. Very nice to have you aboard.
Thanks, Joe.
This is an absolutely delightful memoir. Very honest.
And you forgot writing in Cars of Boys. Because it came out in 2001 after 9/11. As the president was saying, don't go to malls. So that was the last one. And then I stayed in New York.
Did you enjoy the act of writing about your life and contemplating and reflecting?
Well, I have a good memory of childhood and camp, and I remember every piece of film I shot. I have a strange memory, but I don't know what I did last week, to be perfectly honest, you know, because there was so much I was doing in New York. But I went to Milwaukee, met the president, and then drove to Chicago to get a flight home. So I got in Sunday night. So I'm turned around a little bit.
But as far as the act of writing the book and remembering the stuff and remembering those times at camp and remembering being a dancer and remembering what you wanted to do and when you wanted to do it, that came relatively easily.
That came easy. I talked into a tape recorder. I mumble, but working, and I have a thick accent, but I'd talk. Stop pinging. These phones drive me crazy. And then someone type it out, then I correct it because they can't understand me sometimes. And I can't understand other people. My brother and I both have, but we were sent to out-of-town college to lose our accents. Didn't work. So there you have it.
His is a little more melodic, though, isn't it?
Oh, he mumbles differently. He talks staccato.
Yeah.
I do run-on.
But it's still that Bronx accent.
It's a Bronx accent, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Did your parents sound like that too?
My father didn't, because he was a businessman and slightly boring. And my mother, well, she was so busy tapping, you know, because she taught dancing school in the basement of our building in the Bronx.
Right.
Between the incinerator and where the bikes and sleds were kept. Called the ballroom. Maybe some year it was called that, but it was a cellar. So she lived on Anison and Excedrin, and because tapping all day long, there was acrobats and ballet and jazz and all that stuff, and recitations and singing. But she thought everyone should get the experience of entertaining. And she had 360 students when I was growing up, and everyone loved her but me, because she was my mother. Yeah.
In reading the book, you sort of get the sense, and in some cases, it was different than the, I mean, some ways it's the same, but different than the typical strained mother-daughter relationship.
No, she was very funny. She was extremely funny, as long as you weren't in her line of fire.
Yeah.
You know, if you're making fun of someone else, fine. And you laugh. But you had to learn what sarcasm was. And at 6'7", I didn't understand sarcasm. But she was very sarcastic, and my brother got a sense of, you know, when he was writing for Dick Van Dyke, he called, Ma, how you doing? What happened? I got stuck in the elevator with this guy. He could have been a killer. So he wrote a Van Dyke about it. And he had moles on his back, and she always wanted to connect them, you know, to see what picture it made. So they did a Van Dyke about that.
Was your brother's relationship with your mother similar than your relationship?
No. My brother and sister were planned on. They lived in Pelham at the time.
Right.
Then they moved to the Bronx. Then I came along, the mistake, as I was told. nicely by my mother. So they didn't expect me. That's why they were gone. My brother and sister were both gone by the time I was 8. So I was an only child. So I wanted a brother and sister. I had one, but I didn't know them. They were in Northwestern, and then my brother went into the Army. My sister got married. And at one point, my parents were in the Bronx. I went to college. My sister was married in Chicago. I was at college in New Mexico, and my brother was in California. So we're all in different time zones. So that's how we kept away from our parents.
And it's remarkable that you and your brother then have as close a relationship as you do.
Well, he did say I was too young to quite remember, but he did say they're not going to help us. We got to stick together. And my brother and him stuck together, but I was too young. But when I got older, you know, the years are different. Yeah, when you're 8 and 18, it's different.
Sure.
Than when you're in the 20s and stuff. You know, then you're closer in age. You know, it doesn't matter as much. And so, you know, he's been great. I wouldn't have a career without him. He told me where to go to acting class. He told me who to talk to about this. Don't go to this guy, his house. You know, and he gave me a lot of work. Yeah, and then I got my own work, and then, you know, I knew I was very lucky.
At what point in your life did you think about show business? Was that at all a reflection on what your brother was doing?
Well, sort of. I mean, I didn't count my mother's dancing school or entertaining. We did it for food, and even though we were on the Ted McAmerture Hour and Jackie Gleason, it was my mother's thing. But in New Mexico, there was the Albuquerque Light Opera that did, like, South Pacific and those shows. So they stayed up at night. I'm a night person. So I did a couple of plays there. So when I came out here, my brother said, what are you interested in? I said, nothing. But he remembered there was a little glint that I liked doing. I played Ada Annie in Oklahoma and in New Mexico and in Durango, Colorado, and Theater in the Round. And that was fun, you know?
You were already married, divorced, and had a child at this point.
Yes.
Then the focus became the career.
Well, it was unfortunate. You know, when I married Rob Reiner.
Yep.
You know, and Tracy was there. I mean, kids would come over because we moved to the Valley because I'm not a carpooler. And she could ride her bike. And I made her lunch and all that, but she could ride a bike. Sometimes Rob would drive her, you know. But most of the time, she could ride a bike with the rest of the neighborhood kids. But sometimes a kid would come over, and I said, what happened to that little girl who was here the other day? She said she didn't want to care about me. She just wanted to meet you guys. So that was sort of sad, you know?
Yeah.
But she still has friends from back then.
When you look at the early days, whether it be the Odd Couple and then going into that one episode of Happy Days, which eventually led to...
Well, I did Paul Sam, Friends and Lovers for a short time.
Right. And then, of course, Laverne and Shirley, which was...
It was a big hit.
So, your show with Cindy Williams, and did you know from the episode, from the Happy Days episode, that you were going into something where you had a good character?
No, we just were told we were the girls who put out. You know? That's what we were girls who put out, you know, because, you know, Fonzie was fixing Richie up. And so, if Cindy wanted to do it, she could play against Ron. If she doesn't, you can play either part. That's what was put to us. We were making $30 a week writing a satire for Zoetrope. Not that I'm a writer, you know, in that sense. Exterior Europe Day, not so good. Then, you know, so we said, yeah, we'll do it. But we weren't nervous. We came on and did it. And, you know, we argued a lot because that's what our characters did. We fought, which is based on some... one my brother knew as a kid, as was Fonzie. Yeah, we use our childhood a lot.
Hey, Fonzie!
Hey, the Fonzie old, they're here. All right. Laverne, this is Laverne DeFazio, she's mine. And this is Shirley Feeney, she's yours, as you can see.
Nice to meet you, Richie.
My pleasure.
Hey, they're getting along pretty well, huh? Hey, plant it here, girls, plant it here.
I'm trying to sit down.
Staring? How'd you like your eyes closed for good, huh?
You're too much, Laverne.
So, Cheryl, what do you think of this kid? You've been with worse.
Oh, he's nice. And a tie, too.
And a hanky. Is that for showing or for blowing?
Well, it's been quite an evening. What do you say we go to Richie's house?
Where is Richie's house? Do we need a map?
Oh, no, it's close. You just follow me.
Well, drive slowly. I don't got insurance.
Do you fellas mind if we girls go to the ladies' room and freshen up a bit first?
I'm already fresh.
Laverne!
I'll freshen. I'll make you happy.
And then Freddie Silverman, who was head of ABC then, who I knew from CBS, wanted spinoffs. So Thanksgiving, he asked my brother for spinoffs. Well, I got these two girl bottle caps. And so we went on in January. And Cindy wasn't sure she wanted to do it because back then, if you remember, if you did commercials, you couldn't do TV. If you did TV, you couldn't do movies. Now everyone's doing everything.
Right.
You got Alec Baldwin, Jimmy Fallon, they were all on commercials, you know?
And she wanted to do movies.
She had done three movies.
Yeah.
So at that time it was, do I want to give up my movie career, you know? And she's a great actress.
Was on for 8 seasons. When that show was at its height and the two of you were on the screen, the physical comedy, I mean, I can only think of it as matched to that of I Love Lucy, of how brilliant.
Well, my brother did write for Lucy.
Yeah.
And sometimes it came about because, you know, there's a lot of exposition. So I would do physical. I like behavior. So I would do things, you know, whether it's milk and Pepsi, which I did drink as a child, sorry. But it's the truth. I said, let me drink what I drink. It'll get a reaction, trust me. You know, or if we didn't like the dialogue, then we'd do business, you know, or do physical stuff. Then it became right to the big block comedy scene after a couple of years. But, you know, I was, you know, I guess I was a tomboy. You know, and my brother would say, can you put Cindy on your shoulders and twirl a baton? All right. You know. So we did a lot of things. I got hurt a couple of times, too, by the way.
Yeah, you read about a time when you were in this astronaut suit.
And
you're not wearing
my
a helmet.
Broke.
And down
my
you went.
Broke. And luckily, it was during shooting. You know, so the audience went from laughing to, you know.
Yeah.
And so Phil Forster luckily went and told his old jokes that my brother probably wrote for him back in the day. And they said, go to the hospital and come back. Oh, I don't think so. You know. Just give me the cast. Don't touch the left side of me. Don't touch my shoulder. Just put your hand there. I'll move. You know? Then I want you to try to explain to the emergency room you were in a spacesuit. Your wires broke.
Zoo.
How do I look?
Vera, you look great. Why are you wearing that spacesuit?
You told me to put it on.
What luck? I need someone to help me test it.
Well, all I can tell you, this anti-gravity part ain't working too good.
Okay, I just gotta get the remote control. Okay, here it is. Turn it on. Set the polarity, current, modal, and... Laverne! Laverne!
I'm in, Jack!
Oh, no, I'm starting to hear those voices again.
No, look up!
Laverne, it really works!
Yeah!
This is great!
Yeah, I sound just like Peter Pan!
You're listening to our October 2012 interview with Penny Marshall, who died on Monday at 75. Actor and director Penny Marshall is our guest. Her new book is My Mother Was Nuts. In it, she talks about her childhood, her film career, and life on the set of her hit sitcom, Laverne and Shirley.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
it would seem to me in a situation where the two of you are working so closely together, you have this show on your shoulders that...
Well, it was on all our shows.
Right, but it would put a tension on the relationship. It seemed as though there were tensions that would flare up from time to time between
you and
Cindy.
Well, any family is going to have an argument once in a while.
Right.
You know, any family, your family, I don't care, you know.
But in reading the book, it seemed in the end that it ended badly.
Well, it was anticlimactic, you know. And, of course, she got married, which I was very happy. She was pregnant, going to have a baby, great. Yeah, you know, but I wasn't fond of her husband. And then he stepped in with all these rules. which were crazy rules. And I tried to speak to her, you know, like I had done before when she got rid of the creators, and brought in my friend Monica Johnson, who was Jerry Belson's sister, who I knew for years, you know, who was on Paul Sand.
Right.
So I knew Monica, so that one didn't bother me. It's just she had a manager that was feeding into her insecurities. We're all insecure, you know?
Right.
Everyone in this business is insecure. It's a crazy business. Then Bill was making these rules, you know? And I said, Cindy, lay in bed the whole time. I don't care.
You said you do all the
I'll do the running around.
Right.
Just be the biggest pain in the ass pregnant person we've ever seen. No, that's fine with me. What if you want to go? You know, he said, well, she could only work this many hours. I said, well, she's tired in 4 hours. You know, it was just stupidity on his part. But she was in love and thought he was taking care of her. And he wouldn't let her speak to any of her friends. I called her a million times and couldn't get through. Then as soon as David Landa called me, Squeaky, and said they broke up, I called her immediately. Said, do you need a place to live, stay? What do you need? And I know her kids. And I told her, call Goldie. Because he did the same thing to Goldie.
Mm. And she'd know.
And she just doesn't want to do that, you know?
And you talk about her coming over and staying with you and having the conversation that you should have had 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But in the end, she still very much believed that
Bill was just protecting her.
Yeah.
So she had, and she has kids, so she didn't want to. And the kids don't like him. I know Emily and that. And not so thrilled with him. And Kate and, you know, and our brother don't like him.
But your relationship is good now.
No, we're fine. She's in New York rehearsing a play. And
you kind of chalk it up to you agree to disagree.
Well, yeah, because what can I say? Yeah. It was just, you know, I mean, Michael left too to do Spinal Tap.
Right.
You know?
And the fact that you write in the book about how it was ultimately Whoopi Goldberg who was doing Jumping Jack Flash who had dinner with you and then shortly
I ran into her. I had met her. It was her birthday. We had dinner. And then, you know, went up to her hotel because she was already shooting. They started. They were like 10 days in. And Joel Silver and Larry Gordon saw us, so somebody told them. And I came home to get winter clothes because I bought an apartment in New York. And then I got home to L.A. and they called and screamed, you're going to do this movie. I hadn't even been in enough one-camera movies, you know?
Yeah.
I only knew three-camera in front of an audience. And my brother said, they pay you to learn, you know? They said, don't tell anyone. You know, they screamed. I said, can I read it, you know?
Hey, stop. Call the police. You can't miss me. I'm a little black woman in a big silver box. Over the top of it says phone.
So I have a good phone book. So I called in my brother, my daughter, Jim Belushi, John Lovitz, the late Phil Hartman, Lynn Marie Stewart, a lot of people to fill out. It's a big office, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you need people to talk, make up things, you know? So they were good improvisers. And I brought Jimmy Belushi back to life because he was killed in something, but I needed him back. So I put a bandage on your head. Come here, grab her.
You worked through that, and the film, it was not commercially successful, but it was a learning experience for you, and it got you the next job.
Well, Jim Brooks handed me big.
Yeah.
Because his editor, Richie Marks, and George Bowers, who just recently died, came on. Because, I mean, the guy who edited it together made it to North by Northwest. It was a big action film. And I thought, well, I think you got the Jumping Jack Flash. The guy has to show up, you know, and take it to dinner or something. So I had a different angle on it. So they recut it for me. And Richie worked for Jim, so they handed me big, not knowing the world had turned it down, by the way, because I don't read the trade so much. You know, especially if you're working, you don't have time to do nothing. So it's read. I understand when I'm big, I'm going, you know. But everyone turned it down because it was two other movies like it.
It was such a beautiful film. I mean, obviously, Tom Hanks was
great. Yeah, but
great
he had passed, but then he came back.
Robert De Niro.
So the first one I had no pre-production on. I was hired on a Friday, shot Monday. This one I had two pre-productions on. So it was strange.
And
he was doing Dragnet, Tom. But he had passed. Everyone had passed. So I said, I'll go a different way. And look who's in all the comedies now, folks.
Robert De Niro.
Okay, I'm not a crazy person. I knew Bob for years. And he had a different sense of humor. But he had a sense of humor. And he was a very polite guy. Different than the parts he plays. You know, but he's in every comedy now.
Penny Marshall was an actress and film director. We spoke with her in 2012 to discuss her memoir, My Mother Was Nuts. There was such a sweetness to that film, though. There was such an innocence to the character.
Well, it has to be played for truth. It's a high-concept movie. But everyone had the thought, when I'm big, I'm gonna. So you've got to play it for real. You put tongue-in-cheek or comment on the material, and you're dead.
And, of course, the iconic scene is at FAO Schwartz.
Okay, let's check out the... Adolescence. 3 years. We do. Every day after school.
But the piano that they had at F.A.O. Schwartz didn't play the right notes. You know, it just played, you know?
Right.
So I went to the Aventa. They had written Heart and Soul, but I thought chopsticks visually would be funny, so I made the Inventor make me a practical thing that will light up and play the right notes. And all they kept saying, the producers saying, Bobby Greeno, do you want tap dancers to fill in? No! If I could do it, they could do it. That's my theory. If I can do it, anyone could do it. Well, not anyone, but Tom certainly could. And Robert Lozier, who I saw in New York. Tom shooting in Europe. So he made it practical. And they kept bothering me, well, do I need dancers? No! What I needed was a click track, which I didn't know that existed, but so that it would be in the same tempo. I mean, it was sort of, but the poor editor, Barry Malkin, who I saw in New York, you know, he had his hands full. Yeah, well, it was the same songs, but, you know, it all started off, you know. But I didn't care if they made mistakes. That's real.
And Tom Hanks had this wonderful childlike quality, of course. He was a child. And Robert Lozier is this big-time businessman who is letting himself go. And the two of them are just delightful in that. It is
yeah,
magic.
I had wanted Ben Gazzara, but he turned it down, the late Ben Gazzara.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I love Ben Gazzara, but he said, I'm a star. I said, yeah, in Italy, you know? But, and his wife at the time said she never forgave him for turning it down.
Yeah.
But Robert Lozier, I knew, played tennis, so he could do the piano thing.
And then you hit the $100 million club.
Yeah. I didn't get it, but the studio did. I don't make that, you know?
Does it mean anything to you in the sense that you were the first to do it? I mean, is there a sense of pride in that?
Well, I'm not that kind of a person. Like, people kept saying that, and I go, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, but it wasn't like I got more money from it, you know? I'm glad it was successful for all concerned.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't even know, you know, it wasn't like I got more money, you know? And so did League make it over $100 million.
You went on, you continued to make films and good films, Awakenings and A League of Their Own. And they're good films. Because these days you're saying you'd rather do, okay, television is good for you.
It's faster, and the movies on HBO are better. You know, because all they care about is what will sell foreign. And like I say, I don't do horror, I don't do vampires, I don't do car crashes, I don't do people in big metal suits. It's not my thing. I tell a story. And whether it be a drama like Awakenings, which they didn't quite expect from me. They expected the comedies, but not that. And I started Mark Wahlberg in Renaissance Man. gave him his first part, got him out of underwear, the Funky Bunch, whatever that was. I wasn't aware of the Funky Bunch because I had done a lot of period pictures.
Good Vibrations, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, well, I didn't know the Funky Bunch. Sorry, I knew the underwear thing because I went to junior high with the Calvin Klein.
With Calvin Klein. He says in the, Mark Wahlberg says in the back of the book, I wouldn't have a career without Penny Marshall.
Well, I started him in a different area. I made him, oh, shut up, you're acting now, get in here. And so he's still my friend. I love him dearly. And he was on 60 Minutes and talked about me, you know?
Penny Marshall died on Monday at 75. This archival interview first aired in October of 2012. What do you think it is that makes you a good director? As you say, you're a storyteller, but what makes you a good director?
I think I'm good at picking talent. I think I'm good at giving backstories to the other characters who don't maybe have dialogue, you know, so it fills it out a little bit. And I like behavior. And I do listen to whatever the actors, you know, say, you know, if they have a little quirk or something, you know, that they like to do this so they can't do that. You know, fine. Like Rosie said, I don't slide. Okay, fine. Learn how to pitch with two balls.
Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Another
great
person
player.
Who you found, really.
Well, she had done something before. I don't know if she did Flintstones or something. But she had done something. But she said, if I'm not right for this movie, I don't belong to this business. And so she was too good a player. That's why I said, you got to lose weight. And Tom, you got to gain weight. Because he was too cute. You couldn't have him, all the girls wanting to date the coach, you know? So he ate his way through Chicago and all of Indiana. Beale, the other white meat, you know?
Mr. Dugan. Mr. Dugan!
What is it, baby? Olga, what the hell is going on? Why have we stopped?
Lou quit.
Who is Lou?
The driver.
McCall could have came by me.
Hey, come on, you girls. We got to get out.
What?
Get
up, what did he say?
Is
that English?
In A League of Their Own, another classic film about, and not only a classic film, but an important film of putting these women on the map.
Yes, because, you know, some of them were embarrassed, you know, and they were sent home, go back in the kitchen. You know, I was a tomboy, you know, and so I never heard of this story if I didn't hear of it, someone else didn't. So I thought, well, let me do it. And the real ladies were in the end.
Which is beautiful.
They were sliding, you know? And they wanted me to go to Syracuse, but I was in New York doing press, so I couldn't quite fly up to Syracuse.
Oh, they had the reunion at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And they went to the Hall of Fame. But I went to the reunion in San Diego last year.
Very exciting. And very...
But Syracuse, I was in the middle of this stuff, and I had to leave for Milwaukee, and then I had to get home because I had stuff to do yesterday, and today, and tomorrow, and the next day.
But you get in the, and you drop this at the beginning, but you meet the president, so that's a big deal, obviously.
Yes, that was a great deal, because I got Secret Service. It was Amazon saying, well, we'll send someone there. No, you can't get in, do you understand? Your Secret Service has to clear you, you know, and I was cleared, because I did it in advance. A very nice man. We talked about smoking. He chews the gum. I wear the patch and do the fake cigarettes, you know, the metal ones.
Yeah. Because in the book you write, you're still smoking, but you've since
stopped. Yes, but I still smoke. But when I'm back there, I can't, and when I'm on a plane, I can't. So there are certain places where you can't. My apartment and house, I can do what I want. It's mine.
And is this something you would like to give up, given...
Yes, I gave it up for 8 months.
After the cancer?
After, I went to the Alan Carr guy came, and I thought this wasn't going to work, and it did for 8 months. Not withdrawal, not anything. I didn't kill anyone. Because I tried to stop before. When I was with Rob, he said, please go back to smoking. You know, I mean, because I get a little cranky. So I got to go to someone else here. There's a Russian in Boston, but he's only there certain days, and I don't know when I'm getting to Boston. You know, so someone has someone here that I got to go to. Because I'd like to for 8 months, nothing. But then my friend Monica Johnson died of cancer, not lung, but other parts. And so there was a thing at her brother, Jerry also, who was my brother's partner, had died previously. And so it was at Joanne Belson's house. So I got up and talked, and that was fine. But then afterwards, you know, they drink, they eat, they drink. I'm not a drinker. They keep saying I have liver cancer. Nothing was wrong with my liver. I smoked, yes. There was a spot on my lung. And it
metastasized.
That's the word. And it went to my brain because the doctor here didn't watch it.
Yeah.
So I was in New York, and I never felt any pain, I must say. I didn't know what they were talking about. So I went to the emergency room because Ronald Perlman, my dear friend, not the actor, the billionaire, had a call waiting downstairs, and I went into Cornell Hospital. And then I went out on Wednesday night to the Bionis thing for the brain injuries thing because Lorraine and I host that every year, which I got to go back to New York and do on the 23rd. And so I said, I'm going. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Otis Anderson's going to be there. If I fall, he'll catch me. He's a big football player. And then on the Friday that I got operated on, by Saturday I was home. Because some of the nurses were a little dumb. I don't like stupidity, you know?
You do not suffer.
I don't have any tolerance.
You do not suffer fools gladly.
Yeah, you know, I do not do that so well. And so I was so frustrated, I went to light up a cigarette. And luckily, I'm friends with regular people, firemen, you know? Mikey was there. He said, but don't! Because there were oxygen tanks behind me, but I couldn't see behind me. There was a big, giant view, you know? So it was behind me, so he grabbed it, and so they sent me home, which was fine by me. So Ronald supplied 24-hour nurses, and a call was downstairs. Yeah, that's what they told me. I said, is the driver still here? Get me White Castle. And I got home when Sunday, yesterday, a thing from White Castle arrived, a blanket, a thermos, packed. White Castle sent me a bunch of stuff, because the frozen ones aren't good. You could only get them in New York. So I'm the only one who also gained 60 pounds and got hard nails from the whole experience. No pain whatsoever.
Well, that's,
thank God. But everyone else sort of, you know, loses weight. I gained 60 pounds. So I'm still trying to lose that.
And finally, the news is now that you're working on a documentary about Dennis Rodman.
Yes, I have radar to the insane. But I know Dennis from the Bulls. And he's always been very nice to me. I've had him a couple of years back. I had him over for Thanksgiving. He was fine with his kids, and my grandkids ran around. And he came up to the apartment in New York and said, hi, thank God he's in the Legends League. So he's going to South America. He went to Indonesia, China. You know, so that keeps him in shape, you know. They keep booking him in to have a drink with Dennis, the worst thing for an alcoholic.
Mm.
But, you know, when he was mumbling, you should talk to us because I can't with the rings in his mouth, you know. It's hard. Clings clanking. Yeah, so he came up to say hi. He looks pretty good. He looks in better shape than the last time I saw him. And I've done him 3 times, so I got to go to Dallas and shoot him outside. I got a lot of talking heads, you know, so I need some exterior stuff. And the NBA footage costs a fortune.
Right.
You know, so I need him walking around a little bit. So, next time, it's too hot to go to Dallas. I'm sorry. It's hot enough in L.A. So I am going to Dallas right now, but I'd like to. I did his mother and his one sister, but there's another sister.
And a fascinating figure. And much.
He is. And, look, he got in the Hall of Fame. Look, this is a guy who was a 25-year-old rookie. John Talley and him were drafted the same year. They were roommates. And he was a 25-year-old, because he was only 5'7".
Right.
And then he had a 2-year growth spurt of a foot. Both his sisters went to college on basketball scholarships, and his mother worked 3 jobs, you know, because the father ran off to the Philippines, so he wouldn't have to pay child support. So his mom had to work 3 jobs, so he was a mama's boy, really. And then he was short, but she made sure they were somewhere, so while she was working, they weren't roaming. So she made him join this basketball club, and the girls were good, and he was short. But then he grew a foot. That's why someone from Southeast Oklahoma found him. So he went to college for a little bit, and then he was drafted by the Pistons. And he didn't drink, no tats, no dyeing of hair, or anything with the Pistons. And I Skyped with Chuck Daly's daughter the other day in New York. Very nice girl. Who knew him since she was 21, yeah?
Mm.
And he was, he'd do the dishes. He was like family.
But now?
But now he's surrounded by some bad people.
I mean, like your mother, a little nuts.
Well, yeah. But we're all a little nuts, buddy. I'm not a drinker. That's one thing. I'm not anything. I got to stop smoking, yes. Which I will do as soon as I'm finished with all this book stuff.
Well, the book is delightful.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful memoir. It's called My Mother Was Nuts. It's published by New Harvest. Penny Marshall, it's been an absolute delight to talk to you and a great thrill, and I thank you very, very much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you so much. New England.
Yes.
Okay.
The name of the book, My Mother Was Nuts. It's published by New Harvest. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Penny Marshall speaking to us in October of 2012 about her memoir, My Mother Was Nuts. She died on Monday due to complications from diabetes. She was 75.